The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network. www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Katie Workman, she is back and she has a brand new book. She's a cookbook author. We'll find out what all she does. I know that she, you've been on NPR and other things. Your brand new book, Dinner Solved, 100 great recipes in this book, huh? Katie, welcome.
Thank you for having me back.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Dinner Solved. Now, this book in how many chapters? Maybe about 10, 15?
20 short chapters. 20 chapters of 5 recipes.
And there's something for everybody, almost.
I hope so. That's the goal.
Yeah. You know, what I didn't see, and it's all the rage maybe right now, and that's gluten-free products. I saw a vegetarian chapter. Mm-hmm. There's meat. There's, salads. What other chapters do you have in there?
Well, there are tons of gluten-free recipes in this. I didn't single them out as such, and I'm not gluten-free, so I really want people to come to it if they are, you know, depending on how seriously they have to pay attention to it to look for themselves. But the chapters are, even though it's called Dinner Solve, there's breakfast, there's lunch, there's snacks, there's cookies, there's homestyle desserts, there's side dishes. And then the dinner chapters are broken out into meat, fish, chicken, pasta. But then there's also a chapter called I Need a Big Fat Hug Food. And there's a chapter for tacos and enchiladas. And there's a chapter for burgers and meatballs. So it's eclectic.
All right. Now, wait. Burgers. I mean, you just do a hamburger and you put lettuce and ketchup and mustard on it. What else do you need?
You know what? You're just fine if you just do that. And a lot of people will never want a burger any other way. But if you do, there is, for instance, a Cajun burger. And you can mix up this great blend of, you know, cumin and coriander, chili powder, and make this great Cajun-inspired spice blend. Mix into the ground meat and make yourself some fabulous patties. You can serve that with, you know, avocado cream or ketchup or nothing or lettuce. And if you have some people in your family who you think just want a plain burger and some who might be interested in this Cajun burger, you can make a few patties with the plain meat, season with salt and pepper, throw in some of the Cajun seasoning to the rest and make up those patties. And that's actually the premise of the whole book, is that every recipe has a fork in the road. So you can make a recipe up to a certain point, separate some of it out, leave it plainer and simpler, keep going with the rest of it. Or maybe you have vegetarian in your family, so you can make a dish that's part vegetarian, part meaty, or maybe somebody in your family hates spice, but everyone else loves it. So there's all these different ways to customize your meals.
You know, talking about customizing the burgers, one thing I like to do, and you had a picture of it in there, was the burger. You know, the ketchup's nice, just the plain. That's kind of the classic type person that you mentioned. But I like sprouts on mine. I think they just give it a lot of flavor and zest.
Yeah, and good texture, too. Yeah. It's nice, the little crunch.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, topping a burger is a highly personal matter. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of possible toppings in there. And then there's, you know, ketchup and mustard and tomatoes, lettuce for the purists. And then there's just all sorts of different ideas. But that's a really nice, when you have a bunch of people over, that's just one of the examples of some of the food that's great for a crowd, because you don't have to think, is everyone going to like this one dish?
And if you're having burgers, I mean, you have that vegetarian nearby.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's got to be a vegetarian burger in a Dinner Solved, isn't there?
There is. And it's a Southwestern vegetarian burger and has black beans and nice Southwest seasonings. And even non-vegetarians have told me that they really like it. And I really wanted to come up with a good vegetarian burger because my sister and her girls are vegetarian and my mother's vegetarian, and I have watched them order vegetable burgers in more restaurants than I can count, and I have watched them be disappointed in more restaurants than I can count. So I wanted to come up with something that had good crunch on the outside and had, you know, wasn't dry, wasn't going to fall apart, had really good flavor, wasn't bland. So I worked hard on that one, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I notice when I go to the store and I buy that black bean burger from that brand name that's, vegetarian, I'm pretty much disappointed myself unless I'm not cooking it right.
Well, I think that it's hard to make a mass-produced vegetarian burger taste great, and I would have to ask my sister which are the best ones on the market, because I know that they do rely on them, and, you know, there's so many more vegetarian products out there, you know, in the freezer aisle, there's so many more products out there, which is great, and, you know, speaking of all that, this is not a book about you must cook dinner every night, you must cook for your family, you must never use prepared foods. It's a book about making your life work. And it's a book about figuring out, you know, if you get dinner on the table twice a week, great. Three, fantastic. But it's not about all or nothing. It's not about if you don't buy organic, you're a bad person. It's not about if you don't, you know, if you're not going to make dinner every night, then you have failed. It's absolutely about sort of making people feel comfortable and empowered and excited about getting in the kitchen and doing something really nice for themselves and their family, and bringing the kids along for the ride, both in the kitchen and exploring new flavors, and not making such a big stinking deal about it.
But, you know, on the other hand, your book, like Dinner Solved, if you're at home making this stuff, and, you know, the recipes in here, not that difficult. I mean, I'm looking at these recipes thinking, you know, I could even probably do that. But you know what's in your food. When you're out and about, you don't know what's in it. And even if you buy commercial products, you don't know what they've really added in there.
Right. Well, or you're looking at an ingredient list that is frighteningly long and full of words that are very hard to pronounce. So that's, you know, that's one of the many benefits to cooking some meals at home and knowing what's going in your food, having your kids and yourselves also see the process of what goes into making, you know, a chicken dish as opposed to just defrosting something all the time, you know. So it's very pleasurable once you let yourself get into it. And it's also, it is a way, like, for instance, no matter how much salt you put in, you might think I'm generously salting something. It's probably a lot less than the salt that would be in the packaged product, just for an example. And, you know, you can control then the amount of salt and fat that goes into things. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of salt and fat. I think salt and fat are two extraordinarily wonderful things and that we shouldn't be so frightened of them. But obviously, if you have health issues, you have to pay attention. But otherwise, you know, that pat of butter to finish a pasta recipe at the end to make that sauce all silky and voluptuous, put that pat of butter in, by all means.
Katie, what happened to you? I mean, your mother's a vegetarian, your sister,
I've always been the wayward black sheep of the family. It's sad, but I can own it now.
There you go. Well, I tell you what, I like a great hamburger and a great steak, and, you know...
There's a good steak in there.
Oh, yeah.
With chimichurri sauce.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, and you can make the chimichurri sauce with cilantro or without, because some people like cilantro and some people don't. And you can also use the chimichurri sauce on fish, for example. If you have somebody on the table who doesn't want a big steak, but you do, that sauce goes wonderfully on everything.
Yeah, it sounds even better, I think, on fish. I mean, you do have some great fish recipes in here also. Dinner Solved, of course. You know, let's take a look at the day in the life of Katie Workman. I mean, you are probably...
I can hear my kids rolling their eyes right now somewhere.
Oh, joy.
Yeah.
you're probably in the kitchen all the time cooking.
I am. And it is my job. It's also my pleasure. And I do cook for pleasure. I will come home late at night and just start throwing together a soup just to unwind and relax. So I really do love it. And it's true, though. I do have the ability to... I mean... Yes, dinner is on my table pretty much every night, unless I really want to order sushi, and then we absolutely have to order sushi and whatever I've been cooking. But the other night is Saturday night, and I'd been cooking all day. And then, so 5 o'clock rolls around, and all of a sudden I realize I have nothing for dinner. I've made preserved lemons. I've made cookies. I've developed 3 recipes. I've been writing about a chili all day. I've been writing about something else. Something else was in the slow cooker, half cooked, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God. So I pulled out a frozen lasagna and put it in the oven. It was like dishes everywhere. My husband was like, I don't understand. What are all these dishes? And, you know, I was like, look at these beautiful preserved lemons. And like, but I hadn't made anything that we could actually consume and call a meal.
You know, my wife cooks a lot. And, you know, I can really appreciate that because I feel like it's healthier and everything. So I can maybe understand your husband when he comes home and there's a lasagna that maybe from one of a brand name manufacturers from a supermarket, he's pretty depressed.
It happens very rarely in my house, I have to say. But my family is thrilled when I'm on the road for a long time, because even though I do leave them meals because I've cooked them, they're like, thank God she's gone, we can order a pizza, is basically what I think they all think in my house. Thank God we can eat pizza like normal people.
Yeah, you know, and I would think that you'd come home and you'd say, okay, honey, I've been cooking all day. Let's go out to eat. But that's not really the case. You're one that loves to cook.
I really do love it. I do. And also, I mean, for the most part, I am cooking something that it would feel silly not to eat. So there's, you know, the recipe testing goes on and on. The trouble with what I do is that my kids, when they love something, they're like, will you make that lasagna again? Will you make that macaroni and cheese again? Will you make that meatloaf again? And I'm like, on to the next thing. I'm testing something new. So I'm like, nope, sorry. You know, like, they're like, we just want, you know, your classic tacos. And I'm like, not tonight. You know, tonight is like rutabagas. No, I don't do that. But, you know, but there's always something new. So actually, it's most people obviously feel more, you know, the challenge is getting stuck in a rut. And that's really, again, what this book was designed to do, is sort of to get people to feel like out of their rut and feel like, oh, I can. And there's some boilerplate recipes. Like there's a very simple pasta recipe, for example, where you learn how to make a sauce with some of the cooking water from cooking the pasta, which has a nice dose of starch in it that the pasta releases as it cooks. And if you just saute up some vegetables, sear up something like chicken cubes or shrimp or whatever it is, and then you can mix and match vegetables with all of that and then just throw it all together. And once you sort of have the technique down, and technique's a fancy word for once you do it once, then you realize, oh, I could do this with broccoli, I could do this with cauliflower, I could do this with pork cubes, you know, and you could just keep going, and then that gets you out of that rut, and you don't think, I'm going to make that same chicken and broccoli dish again. You might love it, but after a few times you might think, you know what, I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm going to do it with shrimp and asparagus.
All right, so you know, my wife made a hummus last night, and I know that you have a hummus mm-hmm. recipe in here. Chickpeas, people that don't know, maybe chickpeas and hummus? I didn't know that till she made it.
Really?
But she has tried using the sesame seed paste.
Yep.
For it, and she makes it.
Yep, tahini.
Yeah, with really, it's something that she just doesn't like too much. You can make a hummus without some of the ingredients that you don't like?
Definitely. It's funny. Tahini is a Middle Eastern chickpea paste. And for those of you who might not know it, it's very much a similar consistency to peanut butter. But it's made with sesame seeds, but has that kind of toasted, nutty sesame flavor. And some people don't love that flavor. So you could either use a tiny touch of it and really just have it be a very background flavor. And I don't like too much tahini in my hummus either. I like a lot of lemon and olive oil and sort of the chickpeas and a generous amount of salt and pepper and a little bit of cumin. That's the other flavor that's sort of classically associated with traditional hummus. And you can absolutely leave the tahini out. If it's not your thing, just leave it out. And it's just, you're going to have, essentially, you're just going to have if you like white bean dip or chickpea dip, you know, that's what you're going to end up with. And you can add as much to have as thick or thin as you like by adding olive oil and water. And you don't just have to add olive oil to make your tahini. I like my tahini pretty thin and smooth. I like it not like so clumpy. So to get it that way, I would have to add a lot of olive oil, but I actually add a little bit of warm water to thin it out a little bit. So you still have the flavor and the mouthfeel of the olive oil, but you don't have to add half a cup of it.
There you go. All right. So the hummus with your recipes in the book, Dinner Solved. If you didn't like something in here, there's always a possibility that you could go ahead and take that out. If you do, how does that mess with the recipe?
Well, there's a lot of writing in the book about what you can take out. You know, if you don't like this, leave this out. If you don't like this, you know, leave it out of some portions. If you don't like broccoli, put in cauliflower instead. So there's a lot of suggestions for how to mix and match and adapt. And I definitely address what can be left out. In general, if you leave out a spice you don't like, that will not hurt the dish. If anything, it will make you eat the dish that you might not have liked, especially if it's something like cilantro, which we mentioned, or some people don't love cumin, some people don't love sesame. If you leave out that sort of ingredient, it's just fine. You're just customizing it. Because whatever recipe is in my book, there's probably 50,000 other recipes for that thing that have different proportions anyway. This is just the one I picked, but it doesn't mean it's the only way to make it. Baked goods are trickier. Baked goods are you know, that's more chemistry than not. So you can't just decide that you're out of baking powder and you're going to leave it out. You'll have a pretty flat cookie at that point, which may be fine. But even having said that, my son, he was making the, I have a recipe for a berry streusel coffee cake in there. And one day he was sort of taking over for me and making it. And he was like 10 at the time and he mismeasured the flour. And as he was pouring it into the pans, I was like, huh, something's funny. And then we were baking them. They came out and they were not nearly as tall. They had a little pudding like cake consistency. And I realized he had left out half a cup of the flour, but he essentially had made a clafouti, which is basically, you know, a French word for sort of a cake that is more like moist and pudding like in texture than the fluffier, you know, drier cakes that we have in this country. And it was delicious. So he in fact screwed up and invented something new.
There you go. Did you use that in your recipe book?
I talked about it. I talked about how in the head note, I talk about, I have my recipe in there, but I'm like, if you left out a cup of this flour, who knows? You're going to, you know, it turned out pretty great.
Well, you know, scones, a big thing anymore, I think. And I love scones. You have a recipe in here for scones. How hard are those to make if I were to make those, whether it is the flavor of yours or even another flavor like a chocolate chip or something?
Well, scones are really easy, and essentially, if you can make cookies or if you've made biscuits, you can make scones. So, you know, it's a flour and butter, and this is sort of these basic ingredients, and then these ones have orange in them, so orange zest, and then you could also add some chopped up dried apricots, you could add dried cranberries, you could add chocolate chips to them, you could add cinnamon, you could add anything that you might add to like a cookie or a quick bread recipe. So if you think of them like muffins, they're essentially sort of like a muffin meets a biscuit, meets a cookie, meets something else.
You know, you have a grain in your book, Dinner Solved, and I'm glad that you put the pronunciation in there. It's quinoa. I mean, quinoa. It's been around for centuries, but in the American cookbook, probably fairly new.
Right. It's fairly new. I mean, quinoa was grown in Peru by the Incas 2,000 years ago. They'd be very pleased to know that their grain was all the rage today, you know, that they were, you know, ahead of the curve. Well, quinoa is great because it has a lot of protein in it, and many grains do not have that much protein in it. So that's one of the big advantages of quinoa. The other big advantage of quinoa for many people is that it's gluten-free. So some grains are gluten-free, some grains aren't. So this has become a very big mainstay of gluten-free people who are looking, you know, for something in the starch category. And it's very versatile. And I have a quinoa salad in here that has kale and dried cherries in it. And that has been a very large crowd pleaser in my world. And I remember I was working on the book and I had layouts of the book. So the pages were just printed and friend was over and she just walked by and she was like, I just want that right now. And so I made it. And then she's like, I didn't think you'd actually make that. I was like, it took about 20 minutes, really. It's really easy. So, and it's a fun grain to play with. And they have a lot of different kinds now. They have red quinoa and black quinoa. I just bought a rainbow quinoa. It's really a very cool. Lundberg makes all these really interesting races, and they just make a quinoa. That was one I just tried. And World Market. Do you know World Market Cost Plus? I think they're out here. They have all these great quinoas, too. Anyway, there's tons of them on the market now.
And, you know, I think that we put it one time in a my wife was making a shepherd's pie out of ground beef, and she used that in there, which it was delicious.
In with the ground beef?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
And not only that, but I think that I've had some cookies from somebody else that they use that in. So it's a product that you can really use with a lot of different things.
It's very versatile. And like most grains, it has a pretty neutral flavor. So it can be used. People have seen it be cooked and then dried out again and then used as a crust for like fish. I use it a lot in like room temperature salads or add it to soups. Can be at soups and stews. It's a nice way to thicken something up, no fat and protein and an interesting texture. It has this little sprouty thing. So when you cook it after about 15 minutes, it releases its, I'm being so technical here, this little sprouty thing. I'm sure the quinoa like scientists across the country are cringing. So the little sprouty thing gets released and it has a really nice texture.
Yeah, I think so too.
You can use really a lot of different flavors with it. It's very fluid.
All right, so, you know, when I think of deviled eggs, I think that you just boil an egg, you cut it in half, you maybe mix some mayonnaise with the yolk, and voila, maybe put some paprika on it. But you have different recipes in there for deviled eggs.
Well, what you just said makes a perfectly fantastic deviled egg, and voila, I would eat one of those right now if you had one. But they are such a great way to, you know, explore new flavors. Again, it's like a nice way to bring the kids in the kitchen. Take out those yolks, mash them up, add some, you know, a little bit of mayonnaise and some salt and pepper, maybe some minced onion or shallot, maybe a tiny bit of Dijon mustard, which is a nice, I love Dijon mustard. I use it all the time. I think, you know, it has that, the nice sharpness cuts through, like, it brightens things, lifts up flavors, and it goes really well against things that are like creamy or things that are cheesy or rich. So it's a very good addition. So that's the beginning. And then you could just add some paprika, call it a day. You could also mash in an avocado. You could mash in some frizzled shallots. You could add in za'atar is a spice that I love, which is this cool Middle Eastern spice that has sumac and thyme and sesame. And it's just like, has this incredible flavor. And I mean, it comes in a jar. You're not mixing all this stuff together. You're not toasting sesame seeds. So there's, you know, you could sprinkle some jalapeno on top of it. You could sprinkle chives. You could, it's like a great springboard to start to poke around your spice cabinet.
All right, Katie, you know, before this book, Dinner Solved, you were talking to the moms out there with your cookbook. Tell me a little bit about the cookbook prior to Dinner Solved.
So my first cookbook was called The Mom 100 Cookbook, and the subtitle, which I wish you had in front of you so you could read it in your lovely voice, was 100 Recipes Every Mom Needs in Her Back Pocket. And that was also 20 short chapters. Each chapter was dedicated towards one of the dilemmas that we parents face every day. I need to get my kids to eat more fish. Like, you know, my kids need to explore different vegetables. I'm tired of looking at that package of chicken breasts and making the same thing. My kid has a bake sale tomorrow and they've just let me know that I have to make brownies. So each chapter provided 5 recipe solutions to whatever the day-to-day sort of dilemma was, and just made people feel more comfortable about, you know, it was sort of like a good go-to manual for that.
Would you say that cookbook, you know, when you're a mom, a lot of times you're just starting to learn how to cook for maybe a bigger family. So was that maybe a starter book for somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. This is also a starter book in the same way. It's, you know, it's very accessible. The recipes are absolutely geared toward beginners, but the flavors are intended to be interesting enough that even a very seasoned cook would be very happy with the dishes here, although they might, you know, there's nothing about the recipes that is challenging to anybody. Most of them are quick and easy. And the ones that take longer are hands off. It might be something, you know, that it might be a roast that goes in the oven unattended for 3 hours, which is a great Sunday thing to do. Or it might be something that you can make ahead and then just put in the oven that night. So both books were very much intended to be solutions. They're intended to be the cookbook that you leave on the counter and don't feel so tempted to put in the bookshelf.
All right, you know, in this book, Dinner Solved, I turned to a page and it was like, yeah, there's kind of a homemade tomato paste. And you wrote about a cookbook author that passed away just a few years ago, mm-hmm. that you got this idea from. Who was that author?
Oh, Marcella Hazan. She was one of the total grandmothers of Italian cookbook writing and cooking, and she was wonderful. She wrote beautiful books. The Essentials of Italian Cooking was her famous book. She's a very opinionated writer with a very strong voice. I taught myself how to make pasta from her book. She had 8-page pasta instructions, and I painstakingly went through them over and over again with my little hand crank pasta machine when I was like 12. Such a little food nerd. And I was just completely absorbed by her. And her voice was also just so amazing. She would say, do this, don't do that. Americans do this and it's disgusting. Like, she pulled no punches. And, but she also talked about the pleasures of a simple meal, of entertaining, of that nobody, when you're having people over and when you're having family over, nobody is looking for to be, you know, culinarily challenged. Nobody's looking for you to be jumping through some sort of like crazy kitchen hoops. It's just about simple food prepared with great affection for the people that you are cooking for. And that's the end of that. And it's just a wonderful thing to keep in mind.
You know, in my mind's eye, I can see little Katie, and she's maybe asking her parents, instead of that Play-Doh machine that'll make things, you want a crank pasta machine.
Well, it's funny. People say to me, oh, when did you think you're going to become a food writer? And did you always want to write cookbooks? And the dots connect much more in retrospect. I'm like, let's go back. When I was 10, I think I was 8 or something, I got a typewriter for my birthday. When I was 12, I asked for a pasta machine. My high school graduation present was a Cuisinart. Like, huh, you know, it doesn't take a real wizard to look back and think, well, I see the direction this was pointing.
There you go. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit now about a website. If I wanted more information about your books, Dinner Solved, where would I go?
TheMom100.com, which, of course, is the name of the first book, but also the name of my blog, and where you can find out how to reach me or ask questions. I'm always happy to hear from people.
How about NPR? Now, you do some things on NPR, too, once in a while.
Yeah, I do. I've been on All Things Considered a bunch of times, and that's been lovely. I love doing radio. Radio is my... Don't tell television, but radio is my favorite medium. Tell television.
Nobody will know. It's just between
just
you
us.
And me. Yes. All right, well, Dinner Solved, 100 ingenious recipes that make the whole family, including you, just as happy as can be. Katie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, what a great cookbook, whether you're a seasoned cook, whether you're just brand new. Katie Workman has recipes that you can do, and if you've been cooking for a long time, you'll have some great ideas for your next dinner. You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I'm Mark DeWitt, along with Katie Workman, author of her brand new book, Dinner Solved. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.